Authors, archivists, historians, and bibliophiles have launched an online war against tech giants and artificial intelligence developers after an increasing mountain of evidence shows they're buying rare and antique books en masse and feeding them to large language models, only to slice off their spines and destroy the original print copies in the process. Documents made public in a lawsuit from authors against Anthropic earlier this year revealed the company had bought millions of physical books, hired contractors to slice their bindings off, fed the pages into high-speed scanners, and then shredded the originals in a venture called Project Panama. Reporting then revealed a historic spike in the sale of physical books printed before 2022, and booksellers began voicing their suspicions that AI companies were secretly their big buyers. Book lovers and AI skeptics called it evil incarnate and rallied against the practice. But more reporting from 404 Media and others has revealed it's not just physical bestsellers hitting the chopping block, but rare, antique, and out-of-print books that may not be otherwise preserved. 404, a media company founded by tech journalists, on Monday published the results of an investigation in which an unnamed rare bookseller who'd received an order for almost 1,000 physical copies allowed reporters to place an Apple AirTag inside one of the books. The company tracked the package from California to Milwaukee, Colorado Springs, and ultimately an Amazon-owned warehouse coded by the company as VGT3. The entrance to the building boasts a logo of a Tyrannosaurus Rex preparing to eat an open book, 404 Media said, and employees report nice jobs where, quote, all we do is scan books all day. The investigation has revealed how major tech giants are operating dedicated, industrial-scale book scanning facilities in order to train large language AI models.
How you doing, little guy? What's happening? How you doing? I didn't bring any food for you, unfortunately, but it's good to see you anyway. And yeah, folks, the destruction of books that is happening, like as I mentioned on the last report, this is a very serious issue that is happening very rapidly right before our eyes. And this is a very, very dangerous thing because it is effectively erasing our history. Once all this stuff is digitized, it can be changed, it can be rewritten. Yeah, and we already know most of the history that we think we know now is bullshit, but there's still a lot of good history that's out there. Now, the last 10 or 15 years, possibly more, the last 20 years, pretty much since the advent of the internet, there's been all sorts of people that have been scanning rare books and posting them online and helping people find out about the real version of history, about what really happened. There's been a lot of people that have been collecting old books and presenting that information to the world. Some of the stuff that Jason Brashears in Archaics has presented to the world. Phenomenal output of old books. Whether you agree with his interpretations of them or not, he's done a fantastic job of putting this information out there so that people can make their own minds up on things. Imagine if before he was able to do that, all these AI companies had come along and grabbed all those books and digitized them and then destroyed them the way they're doing. And the problem is that what is their plans for these books in the future after digitizing and destroying them? There was actually a film that came out in 1975 called Rollerball, starring James Caan. And some of the stuff that was happening in that movie in 1975 actually predicted what they're doing now, and pay special attention to the way this is structured.
This movie predicted ChatGPT, data centers, ChatGPT psychosis, and specifically the destruction of books and knowledge all the way back in 1975. Watch what happens when this guy goes to get some books.
Can I help you, please?
Yeah, I tried to order some books, and they sent me this notice, said I had to appear at the center personally.
There must be some mistake. The books you've ordered are classified and have been transcribed and summarized.
Well, who summarized them?
I suppose the computer summarized them.
Yeah, a future where you don't have access to books, but instead just access to summarizations based on vague censorship from a central authority that you have no democratic input in. But where are the actual books?
And the books are really in computer banks being summarized. Where is that?
Well, there's a computer bank in Washington. The biggest is in Geneva. I guess that's where all the books are now.
This is Rollerball, and it has a strange critical reception. It came out about 15 to 20 years before Paul Verhoeven started making movies and people started understanding how to watch stuff like RoboCop and Total Recall and Starship Troopers as over-the-top deep satires on America. So I think critics and audiences didn't really know how to deal with it. But if you just imagine this movie came with the tagline directed by Paul Verhoeven, it's one of the best and most grimly predictive movies ever made. But it's also a great example of how movies can become better and more relevant over time, because it wasn't until the last couple years that this movie would have been this predictive. Because later, when the main character played by James Caan goes to Geneva to try and get that knowledge, he meets the guy that runs the central AI data center that dispenses that knowledge, and the guy first says that they've lost the 13th century, like all of it.
This is embarrassing. It's embarrassing to misplace things.
Oh, misplacing data?
The whole of the 13th century.
Which, like, as someone who's worked with Salesforce or any data platform, my god, I got PTSD watching that. Of course, the data is not just going to be summarized and blocked, we're also going to have massive unretrievable data losses. And so where are the books?
What about the books?
Books, oh no, they're all changed, all transcribed, all information is here.
Now let's see what happens when the scientist, played by the brilliant Ralph Richardson in the funniest scene in the movie, goes to get the answer. Watch how he talks to the computer like someone completely in the throes of AI psychosis.
I'd like some information about corporate decisions, how they're made and who makes them.
Theodore, you heard the question. Answer him.
Negative.
You don't have to give him a full political briefing. Answer.
Negative.
Answer.
Corporate decisions are made by corporate executives. Corporate executives make corporate
decisions. I know we have the answers. We do have
knowledge converts
to the waters of history.
Corporate decisions are made by corporate executives.
The model has been trained to not give those answers, apparently. And, like, you read about books that have survived wars and transport and societal collapse, books that have been lovingly cared for by generations of librarians and historians and archivists, only for these AI companies to destroy them while digitizing them and feeding them into their models. Then you read about people no longer reading books but getting summaries of them and thinking that's the same thing. Well, I just have to give credit to a movie that imagines we only have, like, seven corporations in the future called stuff like energy and groceries and luxury that rule our entire society undemocratically and keep us placid by just giving us increasingly violent blood sport. But hey, at least we don't have a sport that is just guys running at each other full speed to give each other concussions. Oh my god.
Now that's really interesting, isn't it? Summarizing the books. Digitizing them and summarizing them. So you don't get to read the book, you just get to read the summary of the book, whatever the official mainstream sources interpreted that book as meaning. You get to read their summary and their interpretation. You don't get to read the book yourself. You don't get to research the information presented in the book, because you don't see the original information that's presented in the book, because the book has been summarized. You only get the official version of what the book said without being able to put any of your personal input into it. This, of course, will destroy the possibility of any type of research, because you won't be able to go back and actually check the original text and find out if there might be a better interpretation of what is being presented. This is very dangerous, and you're actually seeing this happening now online. Like, if you search with Google, which I still do sometimes just because I want to see what it's giving to people, what sort of results it's giving to people. That's why you'll see me showing Google results sometimes, because I want you to see what it's giving to people. For more honest results, you really should use something like Yandex. Is a pretty good browser. I mean, none of them are perfect anymore, but Yandex is certainly a lot better than Google or Brave. I don't know what search engines Brave incorporates into its system. I haven't really looked that far into it. But yeah, Yandex or Brave are both good browsers. But anyway, you see now, if you search on Google, you can search anything, like search Nikola Tesla. And it won't give you a list of all the sites that you want to go and look at, Well, it will if you sort of look hard enough, go through enough pages. But generally, the first thing you'll see is an AI summary of what its interpretation of Nikola Tesla is. And many people will just look at that, and that's all they will take away from it. They won't look past the AI summary. But you think of what could happen by summarizing all these books. Like that guy said in the Rollerball clip. Yeah, we lost the entire 13th century. It's gone. No data on that anymore. The information is lost because, of course, the books don't exist anymore. And many books can be interpreted in many different ways by many different people. And if we don't have the opportunity to do that, and we don't have these books still in existence, well, what hope have we got? Of course, there will be books still in existence, but they will be ensconced in places like the Vatican Library. You know, it's so clever how this system runs, folks. It really is. I mean, when you look at it, you know, the Jews control the world, the Jesuits control the world, the Vatican controls the world, the three city states, the city of London controls the world. You've got so many ways of looking at it and so many different arguments to make. The ones that are doing this to us are the Jews, they're the Freemasons, they're the Jesuits, they're aliens, they're the Anunnaki, they're the Nephilim. They've really set it up well. You know, I said in my first film back in 2008 called The Big Picture, I said the best place to hide a real conspiracy is to create a conspiracy culture around it and turn everything into a conspiracy so that no one ever sees the single thread running through the middle of it all. And yeah, I might talk about that a little bit later when I get done with catching up on world events. And hasn't it been a crazy week, as usual? The floods in Nepal, absolutely horrendous floods in Nepal. Just entire villages wiped out due to what appears to have been a landslide, like a glacier simply broke free. About 600 meters of glacier broke free and just basically slid down into a reservoir pond, which isn't a real dam. It's just got debris and sediment around the outside, which is what sort of causes it. These glacial lakes are well known in Nepal, and they keep a close eye on them to keep a watch of how much they're rising, because once they rise to a certain level, they get a certain amount of pressure behind this rock wall and they tend to collapse. And they need to let the people downstream know this is about to happen. And this happens quite regularly. But what happened with this flood we just saw in Nepal was apparently a large section of glacier simply snapped off and slid down the mountain like a landslide, landed in this lake and basically flooded the entire region. Yeah, pretty devastating, folks. And the look of the lake after it had been emptied, after the glacier fell into it, was again quite remarkable. Now you look at this and it looks like it was very likely perfectly natural. But then again, you see certain signs. I mean, they do like to signal themselves and let people know that things are running according to plan. And one of their favorite methods of doing this, of course, is use of the number 33. And there was certainly a lot of use of that number in this flood in Nepal.
So apparently, and just coincidentally, of course, it happened to be 33 people from the UK killed in these floods, 33 Britons. Just coincidentally, there were reports that there were 33 Americans killed in the floods, along with 33 Latvians killed in the floods. There were also 33 Indians killed in the floods. That number was later updated to 133. There were also 33 security personnel killed in the floods. There was also 33 bodies recovered from the floods in a place called Chitwan. That number was later updated to 233. And of course, the victims were all from 33 countries. Just seems a little strange, but of course, move along, nothing to see here.
And that's kind of interesting, isn't it? It brings it into question whether this was something that was staged. Of course, they could do this, I guess, with lasers from mounted platforms. And we know Israel has what they're calling a space laser, apparently satellite-mounted laser. I mean, whether satellites are real or whether they're not is, of course, another question. But yeah, this could have been done with some sort of laser weapon. Who knows? You could have done that to just break this piece of ice free and flood out that valley. But the thing is, what's the point? I don't think there's been any talk coming from Nepal against the state of Israel. So who would do this and what would be the purpose of such an exercise? Look, here's a chair. I can sit down and have a look at my list in. Although it's in the sun, it's quite hot today. And it's nearly midday. I'm still in Croatia, as you can tell, out in the fig farm. And it's really beautiful here, though, as I said, it is quite hot. But yeah, interesting times, folks. Really interesting times. Nice to be back here, though. It's always nice to be here. Anyway, things are still going on the same as always. Israel has not stopped its rampages across the Gaza Strip. Actually using children now, like settlers are doing terrible things in the West Bank. The IDF has actually been carrying out airstrikes on the West Bank. Remember, this was about taking out Hamas in the Gaza Strip in revenge for October 7th. Well, now they're doing airstrikes in West Bank. They plan to completely divide West Bank. And they're sending in, the settlers are sending in children to terrorize Palestinian children. and push them to the point that an adult will intervene, so then they can call the IDF to have the adult arrested and blah, blah, blah. Like, they're using children as weapons of war in Israel. See, everything Israel tells you that the Palestinians do is actually a lie. Every accusation is a confession. And this is what's going on in West Bank now.
Last night, settler terrorists used their children to help kidnap an international activist from the Palestinian village of Umm al-Khair. I'm here right now. Let me tell you what happened. It started with Palestinian kids playing soccer on their field. Settler children entered and disrupted the game, then stole the kids' ball and taunted them while adults watched. After that, the settler children went to another part of the village and tried to dismantle a fence on Palestinian property. When the activists stepped in to prevent the settler children from tearing down the fence, the settler adults came and grabbed him. They accused him of sexual assault, which is absolutely outrageous, especially given their own statement, where they say that, quote, more egregious assault happened before their filming started. The footage shows the settler children pushing him and trying to destroy property, and him just standing his ground. Then, the adult settlers forced the activist into their illegal outpost at gunpoint. When the police and army showed up, they took him away, with no consequences for the settlers for an extrajudicial arrest. This isn't the first time these children have been sent by their parents to harass Palestinians. It's happened multiple times over the past few weeks, and long before that. They're frequently violent and verbally abusive, knowing there can be no reaction from the Palestinian children, who learn early if they fight back, they'll be punished severely. Settler children are being used as tools to get activists arrested and deported, because the fewer internationals there are, the easier it is to remove Palestinians from their land without attention or blowback. These are child soldiers in a campaign to ethnically cleanse the West Bank. And they're being raised by terrorists who command the forces of the state, feel comfortable arresting people, and aiming weapons in civilians. Make no mistake, the settlers are the ones calling the shots. It should be clear at this point that settler violence is state violence. So if the settlers are prepared to use their children, that means the state is too. And if the settlers know that they can play police and executioner with no consequences, it is because they know that the state wants them to do so and will let them do it as they please.
Pretty horrendous stuff, folks, and the world sits by and does nothing. There's also, I mean, people can do anything they want in Israel. There's, the other day there was a crime lord, a mafia guy who was a member of the Jewish mafia, I think, possibly even in the Ukraine area, but it was during the time of the USSR, like the Soviet Union, before the Soviet Union fell. This guy was part of a Jewish mafia in that area, possibly in the Caucasus region or something like that. Possibly Ukraine, possibly the Caucasus. But his name was Yanis Yushevay, and he was assassinated live on camera in Israel the other day. The guy just walked up, popped him in the head, didn't even touch the glass. It was a perfect hit. Yeah, it's a pretty lawless state, the state of Israel. I mean, remember back in 2014, those Israeli terrorists, IDF, who were just breaking the bones of Palestinian shepherds just out there herding goats. The IDF would come along and find young teenage boys herding goats and surround them and just pick up rocks and break their arms and legs with rocks and just leave them there. This is back in 2014. We've got Israeli tourists running rampant all over the world. They're being banned from all sorts of countries, Thailand, Malaysia. Nobody wants these people around anymore because they're just absolute lunatics. They go out and terrorize everybody in every country they go to. They break all the rules. They treat people like shit. They say it's our money who built your country, so that's just the way it is.
My money, okay? Country. I don't want to pay.
Nobody want to pay you.
Free Palestine. This is Thailand, not your land.
As you've probably seen online, Asian countries are increasingly complaining about Israeli tourists. Every year, thousands of them join what they call the Hummus Trail, traveling through countries such as India, Nepal, Thailand, Vietnam, Laos, or Indonesia's Bali.
Sam will be extremely loud, talking all over other people, saying racist things or racist behaviors. And there were also Israeli tourists who came and bought stuff and didn't pay, and they just basically they stole.
Many of these tourists are in their early 20s. They travel after completing their compulsory military service in the Israeli army, during which they often carry out human rights abuse against Palestinians.
You're a genocidal maniac who bombs children and then tries to come to Vietnam and like go on vacation. You're a war criminal right in front of me. Actually, yeah, I see many war criminals right in front of me.
In Israel, this trip is seen as a rite of passage, a chance to seek freedom, yoga, meditation, detox, and partying after the military service.
You pass the idea?
Well, everyone is part of
that. So, do you oppose genocide?
In recent months, the Hind Rajab Foundation has said it is actively seeking the arrest of some of these Israeli soldiers after gathering evidence of war crimes and genocide in Gaza.
What we do is when there is evidence that this individual has committed a crime, then we prepare a file and try to have them prosecuted for the commission of that crime. These guys go everywhere, and that's part of the problem. The world is open to them now, but we're trying to make the world much smaller.
In India, the village of Kasol is, for instance, known as Mini Israel, and many public signs are in Hebrew. But let's not forget that Israelis enjoy a privilege that most Palestinians simply do not have. Israelis can travel to more than 117 destinations without a visa, and their passport is the 17th strongest in the world. Meanwhile, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in besieged Gaza are forced to live in an open-air prison and are struggling to survive a genocide.
Well, especially in Vietnam, they start to make the connections that maybe these horrific behaviors have a lot to do with the war crimes committed in occupying Palestine. And people start to feel gross out, start to feel like this is unacceptable.
This is my land, this is Thailand, not your land. Why?
Yeah, it is hideous, and they're really getting sick of them in Thailand. And they're all war criminals, all of them. If they're in the IDF, then they're war criminals. And what's happening in Australia, there's a huge rally that happened on August 30 to rally against the new hate speech laws, which are essentially just an end of free speech in Australia. And the government's even outlawing saying anything against Israel, outlawing the creation of any new political party, saying this is hate speech. How the fuck is that hate speech? You even enacting these laws is hate speech from the Australian government, which is an illegitimate government in itself and needs to be replaced. As I said, I hope this rally did something. When I was telling people about it on the last report, I was saying, what you need to do is you need to go to the Governor General's place and call for a disillusionment of this government. They need to be dissolved. Express a loss of confidence in these politicians, because they're all liars and thieves and pedophiles. They're all protecting pedophiles. That's what the Australian police do more than anything, is protect the pedophiles in government. Now, it's become apparent that the Australian police are not there to protect the rights of the people. They're there to protect the politicians. They're like a private army for the political class. That's what the police in Australia have become. And I hope something like that was the motivation of this. And I hope it's ongoing and something is done to hold these lying politicians to account. And in the middle of all this, the Premier of New South Wales, in his infinite wisdom and his support for war crimes, genocide, child abuse and terrorism, has invited 40 members of the Golani Brigade, which is the brigade that shot Hind Rajab, put over 400 bullets into a car that Hind Rajab was in, four-year-old Hind Rajab, and murdered her. And including the leader of the brigade, Lieutenant Roy Orion, who is the guy who ordered the hit on Hind Rajab, and Chris Minns, in his blatant support for war crimes, terrorism and child abuse, has invited these people to run in the Sydney Marathon, and not only that, he is providing them with police protection.
Using the marathon to whitewash their war crimes, fresh from the killing fields of Gaza, the IDF is sending a propaganda delegation to run amongst you. They are sending war criminals to run side by side with your family and try and whitewash their disgusting butchery in Gaza, where they have admitted killing 20,000 kids and 70,000 others. So we're here to say, IDF off our streets! IDF off our streets! It's that simple.
This just goes to show how much Australia doesn't give a flying fuck about the people of the country and doesn't give a flying fuck about international law, doesn't give a flying fuck about children. It shows that Chris Minns himself is a supporter of terrorism, child abuse and war crimes, and has therefore abdicated his right to have any position in the Australian government. It's not a right, actually, it's a privilege to actually be in a position where he can affect the lives of others, because this guy shouldn't be in that position, being that he is a supporter of terrorism, war crimes, child abuse and open genocide of a defenseless population. They're calling it a war, of course, but it's not a war, because it takes two armies to have a war, folks. There is no army in Gaza Strip. It's a population of children. Unbelievable, folks. Unbelievable. And of course, in the middle of all of this, while all of this genocide is going on and people are starting to wake up about it, even US servicemen are speaking out against Israel and saying that they no longer want to go and fight in US wars because these US wars are not there to protect the people. They're there just to support Israel, and people are not willing to go and die for Israel.
I got pulled into an officer's office and counseled for posts that I have on my social media. During the counseling, they told me I'm under investigation as a threat to national security. When I asked for proof, like what the posts were yesterday, they refused to give it to me. They made me come back today to further go over stuff. They gave me the proof, and the proof they gave me are anti-Israel posts. Now, when I joined the military, I took an allegiance to support the United States of America. I did not ever take an allegiance to support Israel. But yet, I am deemed a threat to national security because I do not support Israel and their genocide against the Palestinian people. Yes, you heard that right. I am deemed a threat to national security because I don't support Israel's genocide against the Palestinian people. Since when does not supporting a foreign nation get a U.S. soldier investigated for being a threat to national security?
lot of soldiers are standing up against this now.
You know, this video is going to cause me to lose a lot of respect and a lot of eyes, and that's okay. I'd like to keep it real. But as of last night at midnight, my military contract officially terminated, putting me on veteran status, which means I no longer have to abide by DOD or DOW guidelines as it relates to what I have to say on social media, so let's air it out. I want to preface this right now. I'm a foundational American patriot. I believe in the Constitution of the United States, which is why I swore an oath to defend it against enemies foreign and domestic. The question is, what happens when the enemies are in your government? Here's the thing. I love the military. I love the men and women that selflessly make the sacrifice every single day to do what they do. I love the flag, Old Glory, flying high, representing America's interests only, and America's interests only, and America's interests only, and we all know what I'm talking about. There are three contributing factors on why I hung up the uniform when I was planning on doing a 20-year career, and I'm very discouraged to say that because I made the military my entire life. And some of these accommodations, awards, whatever you want to call them, come from my experience of how much time, effort, and energy I put into the military. And I don't say this to boast, but to put it into perspective, I won a National Military Award. I was the face of the entire Air National Guard, again, on a national level, based off of how much time, effort, and energy I sacrificed into my career and into that uniform. I reflect on my career very fondly. But there are three contributing factors. The governmental decision-making process over the last year has absolutely killed my passion in serving. I have no interest in wearing that uniform anymore as it relates to the government, as it relates to everything going on, as it relates to the corruption, as it relates to the shadiness. And I'll be fully transparent with you. I probably won't even have a social media page tomorrow because social medias are censored. What is freedom of speech anymore? I don't know. Not like I wore a uniform to protect it or defend it, whatever you want to call it. Number two, the merging of the militaries with the small house was the most spit in the face, disrespectful thing that you could have ever done to yourself as service members that wear that uniform, go overseas and do what they do. They want to put the uniform on to, you know, promote American prosperity, and you want to throw them in the same category as Israeli? Okay, yeah. Are we out of our freaking minds? And number three, I'm going to get really personal with this one, and I'm turning my head blatantly. You know, one of my mentors that I looked up to very early on in my military career, his name is Tyler Simmons. You might have recognized the name because he went down on Zeus 9-5 a couple months ago, and I'll be fully transparent with you. I had to stand there at attention with tears in my eyes as I watched his body, I watched his casket get offloaded of a KC-135, and I can tell you that that changed my life forever because he did not need to pass the way that he did, but he went out with a smile on his face. I know he did. There's not another way that he would have gone out. And I miss him, man. And I'm not taking away from any service member, you know, serving right now and what they're doing. You guys are the only reasons why we still have a free country, right? And I want to be fully transparent with you. I'm proud of every single one of you, and I'm thankful for every single one of you. But at the same time, I think that there are some serious issues that need to be addressed.
That's really good to see. And of course, Trump's still just doing his stupid thing and being as stupid as he possibly can, saying the Straits of Hormuz are open and saying they're closed and saying the war's finished and then it's going on and whatever. Now he wants to rename Lake Ontario to Lake America, like he wants to rename the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. Doesn't matter. I mean, Trump can call it the Gulf of America. He can call it Lake America if he wants. The entire rest of the world continues to call it the Gulf of Mexico and Lake Ontario. So Trump's just an idiot. It's amazing the lengths that he goes to create controversy and to create ridiculous talking points for people, and just to stop them talking about the fact that he's mentioned so many times in the Epstein files and that his whole world is being run by the Epstein class. It's quite remarkable, you know. Meanwhile, America is just falling to pieces. Like, the fentanyl crisis is unbelievable. You know, it's just a joke at this stage, the United States. Some of the stuff they're doing here, I mean, even, like, you know, the fast food industry, folks. Remember back in 2014 when they found that place in, I think it was Arizona, they called it the Biological Resource Center, and they found out that they were basically, it was like a chop shop, and they were just creating humans and sewing pieces of other people together, and just, it was like a Frankenstein chop shop, which is probably what supports and provides meat for McDonald's. I mean, who knows, folks?
selling bodies and body parts, a trial set to begin in just months. And tonight, new grisly details of what the FBI says really happened.
ABC 15's Nicole Valdez is live. And Nicole, this paints a Frankenstein-like picture.
Yeah, it really does, Katie and Steve. Closed for years, this building off 24th Street and University doesn't look like much. But according to new claims in these court documents, the Biological Resource Center was essentially running a chop shop for human body parts, mixing, matching, and selling them in ways we'd never heard of until tonight. Described as unsettling, but it sounds a whole lot worse. One FBI agent revealing what it was really like inside the Phoenix body donation facility. In 2014, he saw everything from buckets of heads, arms, and legs to coolers filled with severed penises when the FBI raided the building.
Confused and angry. We thought this was going to be doing some good.
He even spotted a smaller head sewn onto a larger torso in a, quote, Frankenstein manner.
It wasn't a choice we made. It wasn't a choice any of the families made.
Body parts piled on top of each other inside Biological Resource Center, where families donated their loved ones for medical research.
Discoveries of sickness and a disease, maybe come up with a cure.
Some say the company violated everything they promised.
Tragedy that's never resolved, and it just keeps going on and deeper and deeper.
The limbs, according to that agent, with no apparent identification. The company sued months after the FBI raided, families claiming their loved ones weren't treated with dignity and respect, a promise written on their own consent forms. The company also accused of selling body parts for profit after saying they'd only use the parts they needed and would cremate the ones they didn't and return them. A torso with a head apparently went for $2,400, a leg about $1,100. They'd even sell knees and feet alone.
But yeah, and while all this is happening and people are screaming about Israel and there's this fentanyl crisis and you've got chop shops going on in the United States, you've got San Diego introducing legislation to outlaw anti-Semitism by basically checking people's devices and things like that.
Anti-Semitism has been rising in San Diego and across the country. That's according to Jewish organizations and hundreds of speakers at Tuesday's San Diego City Council meeting. Liat Cohen-Reese directs a local anti-Semitism task force. She says defining it is the city's first step to better fight it.
Well, we need language. We need, in order to understand what something is, we need a definition. We need the language.
Nearly everyone who spoke agreed anti-Semitism needs to be combated. They disagreed on how to define it. The city adopted the definition of the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, or IHRA. It's been adopted by dozens of countries and cities across the U.S., including Los Angeles, Chula Vista, and El Cajon. It says anti-Semitism is, quote, a certain perception of Jews, which may be expressed as hatred. It includes 11 examples. 7 of them involve the state of Israel. Critics say the language has been used to silence criticism of Israel and support for Palestinians. One of those critics is Jewish council member Sean Elo Rivera. He says people must be allowed to both love Jewish people and speak freely against actions by the Israeli government.
A definition that cannot hold both of these things at once is not a tool for fighting anti-Semitism. It is a tool for silencing people who care about everyone.
He urged the council to consider other definitions, but he was outvoted 8-1.
Crazy stuff, folks. This is why you shouldn't be using these smart devices. And look, stopping using these smart devices, as I've said so many times, is really the only solution to this problem. You know, the only solution is non-compliance. It's the only solution to any of this stuff. Earlier on, I was mentioning that, okay, you can blame anyone you want, blah, blah, blah. There's so many rabbit holes that have been created for us to go down. And it's important to see what I mean by that. Because that's all the news I've got to go with. So just quickly to finish off. Like many years ago, I put out a film called The Big Picture in 2008. I talked about the three city states, Washington being the military arm. And when you think of the Illuminati and the pyramid and the triangle and the all-seeing eye and all that sort of stuff, well, the triangle, you know, represents the three city states. Even the flag, I think it's a flag, it might be Washington's flag, has three stars on it, which represents the three city states, which is Vatican for control of, you know, spiritual control, control of the mind through religion. And religion, all religion is divisive, all of it is designed to be that way. When you look at Islam and Christianity, the only difference is that the Christians believe Christ was the son of God. The Islam believes he was a prophet like everybody else. People can say all this and all that sort of stuff. You know, there's evil and there's hatred and there's calls to kill people in both religious books. It doesn't matter. They're both very, very morbid and uncomfortable books, both the Bible and the Quran. But they ultimately say the same thing. The only major difference is that one says he was this divine being and the other says he was a prophet. And both groups of people are waiting for the return of this individual. Judaism, on the other hand, says he was a traitor to the Jews and he's burning in a vat of hot excrement in hell, and that the real Messiah will be anointed by them, and that's an upcoming event. They all use different calendars and blah, blah, blah. Even in Thailand and stuff, you go to Thailand, Thailand's like around about 450 years ahead of us in as far as their calendar. So you've got to wonder, is that what our world's going to look like 400 years into the future? Who knows? But all of the stuff about the three city states, like the Vatican running the spiritual center, London running the financial control, and the United States running the military system, this is all very true and very obvious, and it's still the same as the way I was talking back in 2008 in that film. The question is, who runs all of that? Well, obviously, what controls it is the financial system. And we never had a financial system years ago. I've spoken about this many, many times. There's no way all of those incredible buildings were constructed through Europe and through the Middle East and through South America, and all these pyramids, all this incredible stuff that exists all over the world. There's no way any of this stuff was built by people who were being paid by the hour to build things. This stuff was built by people who loved what they did. It was built because it wasn't just functional, it was also energetically functional. I mean, it wasn't just a cupboard to put things in, it was a cupboard that did something. It was a house that did something, like churches. These were not places of worship, they were divine things, energy buildings. The cymatics on the window, the bells that they used to have that were took away. I put a video on recently about how they melted all the bells. All the stuff that was taken away from us, well, who did that? And why was this system created whereby all the food forests were destroyed? Suddenly we had to pay for food. All of the healing centers and the energy centers were destroyed. Somehow we suddenly had to pay for food and for energy and for healing, when all of those things were provided by the societies we created. So who did this? Well, look at the money system. I mean, it's a recent addition to the human psyche. Probably something they hadn't tried before. But you look through history, what we can garner to be true, and so much of it isn't true, but you know, what we can garner, we can find certain common themes running through it. Like the fact that the guys with small hats, who are very likely not even Jews, because the word Jew is a word that was created basically by King James and put into the King James Bible. Before that, they were Yehudi, Israelites, whatever, and it meant a completely different thing to what you think it does now. But then you look at even people like Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who documented the terrible things that happened in the Russian gulags, which was Bolshevism. What happened during Bolshevism, the excruciating way people were tortured and killed. And you begin to see a pattern. And even Solzhenitsyn mentioned the Khazars, that the people who were running Bolshevism were not true Jews, they were Khazars. The thing is, you know, we can look at all of this and people just argue, well, it's the Jews, it's the Khazars, it's whatever, it's this, it's that. The Bolsheviks, whatever they were the cruelest people that we know of in history. We're told things about the Nazis, a word that didn't seem to exist until after World War II. We're told about the terrible things they did in the Holocaust, none of which exists in any records of World War II or close to the end of World War II, and didn't actually appear in the human psyche until around about 1970 or 1972, when they started making films about it. I mean, think about TV shows in the 60s and early 70s, like Hogan's Heroes, a comedy show about life in the German POW camps. Bob Crane, who was later murdered for whatever reason. Do you think shows like that would have been possible on TV if the Holocaust was in the human psyche? It was a hilariously funny show. I loved it when I was a kid. Sergeant Schultz and Colonel Klink. You know, the secret tunnels that they had, and you know, it was fantastic. And completely ridiculous. Like, it's kind of like the Get Smart of military shows, you know. But why did that show exist if the Holocaust was real? I mean, they would never have made a TV show like that. There would have been some talk of rescuing Jews or something from there. I mean, something. And interesting that he died, Bob Crane, and that show was just, I mean, you don't see any reruns of that show on TV anymore. You see reruns of Get Smart still on some, I think, on some cable TV or whatever. I doubt that there's any reruns of Hogan's Heroes playing. Maybe there is, who knows? I don't watch TV. Maybe someone out there who does watch TV can enlighten me on that, whether you can find reruns of Hogan's Heroes on any of the cable stations. I'd be interested to know. I'd actually be surprised if you can, but I would be interested to know. I mean, maybe you can, who knows? But what history we can gather, we can find evidence that these guys with small hats have been kicked out of, 109 countries, possibly 110 now that this is happening in Thailand. It's also happening in other countries. I'd say it's pretty much up to 110. And they're wanting it to happen. Like, Benjamin Netanyahu is calling all of the Israelis to come, or all Jews to come to Israel, because it's not safe for you out there. And he's calling them to all come back to Israel because, of course, they need them to populate Greater Israel. He's also pleading with people now, because there's an election coming, apparently, in Israel, and he is facing a lot of corruption charges, and he's pleading with people to vote for him, and he's saying, if my government is removed right now, it will result in a Palestinian state being formed with international approval. So he's basically saying, you can't vote me out. You need me to create Greater Israel and to annex Palestine and Lebanon. And the whole world hates you because this Palestinian state will have international approval. Now, if he's voted out of power, you'll have Red Cross people coming and inspecting the prisons. You'll have so many people from the IDF go up on charges of war crimes, and you'll have Palestine given back to the Palestinian people. I mean, Israel is an absolute abomination. And I just hope he does get voted out. Not that voting means much, but I hope he does get voted out so it paves the way for some sort of international intervention that saves these people. But the thing is, even with all of this, I mean, some of the stuff Israel does, they do because they want you to hate them. And trust me, it's very, very hard not to, because they really create that energy, but they want that energy, because when you're in that state of hatred, it's disempowering for you. I look at what Bibi Netanyahu and parasites like Ben-Gavir and Beelzebub Smokadick and these little gay mindless faggots do, and I don't feel hatred for them. I feel disgust. I feel disgust. It's like looking at a cockroach vomiting on another cockroach, you know. It's just disgusting. You don't want to look at this shit. You just want to stamp on it. But you don't want to stamp on it out of hatred for the cockroach. You just do it because it's fucking disgusting. It's disgusting. These people are like lower life forms. They're like fucking rodents with cancer having sex with diseased fucking maggots or something. I don't know. It's just, you look at them and they're just the most hideous things, subhuman parasites, and you just want to stomp on them. But it's important not to move into hatred in doing that. What you've got to do is understand the power of yourself. See, all the stuff they do is because they want you to hate them, because they want you to hate all Jews, because they want them all to be sent back to Israel. When I say back to Israel, well, no, they want to be sent to Israel, the illegal state that has been formed under false pretenses and built on terrorism and lies.
What if instead of Winnie the Pooh, it was Winnie the Jew? And instead of loving honey, he loves money. And instead of going on adventures with Piglet, he did 9/11.
What should happen to them, they should all, I think, be sent to Oblast, Jewish Autonomous Oblast in Eastern Russia, Southeastern Russia, bordering between Russia and China, I think. That'd be a good spot for them. That was created for them back in the 1930s. It was a result of Bolshevism, actually. And the people that are running Israel, maybe you don't believe in the Khazar theory. Maybe you want to call them Jews. Maybe that's because you just hate Jews and you want to hate all Jews. What I call these people are Bolsheviks, because that's what they are. They're liars and they're Bolsheviks. And I think they've usurped the Jewish faith. But even in the face of that, I mean, they're calling themselves Jews. They're doing horrible things. And so if you really call yourself a Jew now and you're associating with these people or you're supporting the state of Israel, well, then you're just as bad as them anyway. And ultimately, you're a Bolshevik. And all the people that are flooding back there to defend Israel, they're not going there to defend Israel. They're going there because they want to carry out mass murder. They want to see what it feels like to kill a child with impunity. They want to just be able to go there and take out their anger on defenseless people who know they cannot lift one finger to fight back, because you can have Israeli children go in there and terrorize Palestinian children. If one of those Palestinian children fights back, he knows that there will be the army come, he will be arrested, his parents will be arrested, his house will be burnt down. There's nothing they can do to defend themselves. They're simply not able to. And the psychological trauma this sets up in their minds is hideous. And this is the way Israel does things. And this is what they're trying to do in our countries as well, by bringing in all these hate speech laws. If you dare to fight back, we're going to publicize this open genocide here in Australia. We're going to let you see it. We're going to carry out this ultimately staged Bondi shooting so we can use it as an excuse to introduce hate speech laws. We're going to attack our own synagogues, and you're going to see that it's actually provably false flag attacks. And then we're going to have your Minister of New South Wales invite 400 IDF terrorists into your country to run in your marathon, including the head of the Golani Brigade, the brigade that murdered a five-year-old girl by putting 355 bullets into her car. We're going to do this, and don't you dare say anything about it or protest or say Israel's evil, because if you do, we're going to put you in jail for at least a year. If you made a video about it and shared it with anybody else, well, you may get 5 years in jail simply for sharing the truth with people and sharing your opinion. So we're going to put this in your face, and if you dare to have an opinion about it, then we're going to make an example out of you for everybody else. That's what the Australian government is doing, and this is an invalid group of parasites who incorporated in 1973, who haven't enacted a piece of valid legislation in the last 40 years. And the only thing that's going to stop that is people remembering who and what they are. See, that's the thing. They do this because they want you to hate them. And they want you to be going down rabbit holes. They want you to be arguing with everybody else. It's the Jews, it's the Jesuits, it's the Freemasons, it's the whatever. It's all the one thing, folks. It's all the one thing. The mechanism that is being used to run the whole situation and the whole shit show is Israel and the people with small hats, the Khazars, who have infiltrated everybody's governments, and who are the ones who set up the financial system which controls it all, which is why the bells were removed. It's why the food forests were destroyed. It's why people like Nikola Tesla had their energy systems dismantled and destroyed, their lives destroyed. People like Victor Schauberger, people like Royal Raymond Rife. All the people that had these answers were wiped out of existence, and you were put into a situation where you are forced to collect paper in order to pay to be alive. The whole system is one system. And you're given so many different ways in which to comply and give your freedom away. You give your spiritual freedom away by complying with a religion. You give your sovereignty away by complying with a government that you know is invalid, that is made up of people who torture, rape, kill, and terrorize children, the Epstein class. You give your emotional sovereignty away by arguing with people who have different ideas about things and fighting with them instead of fighting the people who put all the questions in place. Now, whether you believe it's any particular group, who it is us. How I've managed to survive and do what I do for so long is because, for me, the system doesn't exist. It's a fiction. Now, we're given people to hate. Like I said, I don't hate Benjamin Netanyahu. I don't hate Ben-Gavir. To me, they have the importance of a cockroach, a diseased cockroach that happens to be mating with a maggot-encrusted rat in front of me that I feel like stomping on because it needs to be done. Not through any hatred. I won't become that which is oppressing us by adopting their morals. I just won't do that. I'll do what needs to be done, but it doesn't require hatred to do that. I mean, these people are psychopaths. It's as simple as that. And they force us to step outside our moral compass at every opportunity. But we don't have to do it. Now, I've got enough stuff, like I've got a passport, I've got, you know, a driver's license, I put registration plates on my car, because I don't want to be stopped by a brain-dead cop and have to explain why I'm traveling every 5 minutes of the day. I prefer to just be able to have freedom of movement. So I've got a passport. I'm not going to stop and argue on the border with all these people all the time. What's the point? I'll use the instruments that they provide in order to be able to navigate through the system in a peaceful way. But that's all they are instruments. I'm not the name. I ultimately don't care about the passport or anything like that. I mean, I think borders should be open, but by the same token, I don't think we should be bombing all these countries and having all nations flooded with migrants. I think cultures should be left where they are. I would have loved to have gone and seen old Persia. I would have loved to have gone and seen old Lebanon. I would have loved to have come and seen old Yugoslavia. There's no reason for all these borders to be in place. Just have those cultures there. The old Germanic people, the old French people, go to the Moroccan people, go to the Zimbabwe people. Doesn't matter, leave them where they are. Let's all work cooperatively, but let's all stay in our own cultures and show off our cultures to the rest of the people. Look what we've done, you know? What's happening now with this forced migration, which is the Kalergi plan? Actually, one of the talks at Liberpulco, when I was just there a couple of weeks ago, was Patrick Henningsen. And I've gone back and checked out his talk. And he was saying, I was had a bit of a conversation with him, and he said that Richard von Kudenhover, Kalergi, which is, he was actually part Japanese, and he wanted to dilute races, but he did not ever have a plan to replace the population of Europe with mass migration. And I've got the book, I'm actually reading the book at the moment, and I beg to differ, Patrick, because what I've found by reading the book is that most of the quotes that you see online, Colden Hoover Kalergi said this, he didn't actually say that in that quote. That quote will generally be taken from disparate places of the book put together, and it will be an interpretation of various lines in the book. But when you read Kalergi's book, he talks about diluting not just the white races, but all races through mass migration. Except, of course, the Jewish race, the Khazarians. They want to keep their blood pool clear. But yes, the world, and I've said this like so many times, that you know, it isn't just the white race is being destroyed. The white race is being destroyed quicker than everybody else because the white race actually poses a threat to these people because it is the white race that has expelled them from 109 countries 1,030 times. So they don't like that. But it's all races that are being destroyed by this intermingling of bloodlines. And it's all races, it's not just the white race. So yeah, I mean, Kalergi absolutely did have a plan to genocide all people of the world, but not to kill them all, just to genocide them like cultural genocide, to blend them all into one so that all people would lose their cultural identity. Because once people have no cultural identity, they have no history, they have no past, you can make them believe whatever you want. And this is how to move them all into the smart prison. And he was also suggesting that the migrant influx into Europe and into all Western countries is a natural result of bombing the countries. He's saying, you know, what did we expect? Well, yeah, it's a natural result of bombing the countries, Patrick, but you got to look at that's why the countries were bombed, in order to flood them into Europe, because they're all being flooded into Europe by Israeli NGOs. Why do you think they would be doing that? Why do you think all of the wars that have been fought in the Middle East since 1945, since the forming of the State of Israel, like in 1947, have all been wars for Israel, to defend Israel, and they've all been to destroy Middle Eastern countries and fund Israel, like, endlessly? And it's all been done to make sure all of these countries, which had very vibrant cultures, all get turned into failed states. And then come along a couple of generations later where people have grown up in these failed states, they have no way of even knowing how to function in a normal society. And then you flood them all into Europe and you get situations like this. And this all looks perfectly normal, folks. Just another wonderful day out at the carnival with the children, as you do when you're in England. And that sort of thing isn't done because it's a natural event of just people coming there because you bombed their countries. No, their countries were bombed in order to create dysfunctional people who don't know how to function in society. And then Israeli NGOs come along and they move them all into Europe. And it's done by design. It might not be exactly what is outlined in the Kalergi plan, which calls for diluting all races and mixing them all together. But how else were you going to do that? And there is, of course, many Jewish extremists, Khazarian extremists, Bolsheviks, who want to see this happen and have created these NGOs and are flooding all these migrants into Western countries very, very deliberately. Yeah, there absolutely needs to be remigration of all these people. They all need to be sent back. But the only way you're going to do that is to stop abiding by the political mandates that are preventing you from doing so. I mean, it's your politicians that have brought all these people in. Why? Because they've got dirt on them all. Look at the Epstein files. What do you think's going on here? Why has there been no arrest in the Epstein files? I keep coming back to this. These people are all compromised. They're not prepared to say, no, I won't do what you tell me, because they know if they do, there will be something released regarding them and Jeffrey Epstein, and then the whole media focus will go on that. And people, of course, want someone to point the finger at. They want to point their finger at Jews. They want to point their finger at the Jesuits. They want to point their finger at Benjamin Netanyahu, Ben-Gavir, all these people, who all are terrible, terrible people. But ultimately, the answer comes down to us. One of the talks at Liberpulco was a talk by a dear friend of mine called Ivana Jurlik-Shindia. And she talked about doing the inner work and facing the shadow. How inner sovereignty, personal sovereignty, is the most radical rebellion you can make. Personal inner sovereignty is something that I have lived for basically my whole life. Like I said before, I don't fight against the system. To me, the system is a fiction. If you're mounting a legal challenge or trying to fight against the system, you are fighting a cloud. You might be able to claim that you're sane and blah, 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 but if you're fighting that which doesn't exist, and how sane are you? Because the only reason the system exists is because people believe it exists. The way I've worked against the system in all the stuff that I've done is I've just lived in my sovereignty. If you're claiming that I'm not sovereign or that I've broken a law, well, all government is contractual law. Show me how I have a contract with you for a start. But basically, I've caused no harm in anything that I've done. I haven't profited from anything that I've done. This is why I don't sell anything. I don't do commerce. I don't pay taxes because the money that I have is a fair exchange between people. I don't have a subscriber section on any of my things. I don't earn money from YouTube. I don't earn money from Patreon or anything like that. I don't have anything hidden behind a paywall. Anything that comes to me is donated by people, which is a gift, which people donate to me because they view it as a fair exchange of service for what I bring people in the videos and the information that I share with them, and hopefully the way I help them. So no one has a claim to that. If the government's claiming that I need to pay tax to them or they have any claim to that money at all, they need to show me proof of claim. I don't need to show them why I don't need to pay it, any money to them. I don't need to show them why I don't need to comply with any of their laws or legislations apart from those I choose to, like having a passport and driver's license and stuff, which I choose to do simply to give me freedom of movement. But I don't need to explain any of that. If someone is claiming I'm not sovereign and they have jurisdiction over me, they need to show me proof of claim. Because they can't. Because there's no contracts that I exist that I've ever entered into between any type of authority figure. And it's all corporate. The whole system is corporate. So this is the way I approach it. And because I have that attitude, I'm never concerned or worried. Oh, the police are going to come for me, or someone's going to come for me, or I'm going to get pulled over, or whatever. If you put yourself in that energetic state where you're worried about something like that, that doesn't exist right now, then you're attracting that to you. That's how it works. What's the saying? Where attention goes, energy flows. People use that and they twist it and say, well, you shouldn't look at all the evil in the world because you're creating it by looking at it. No, that's not facing the shadow. You are creating it by not looking at it. But energetically, if you're worried about being attacked by someone or being assassinated or being pulled over by the police or whatever, being charged with a crime, then you're attracting that to you. Where energy goes, where attention goes, energy flows. That's how it works. I'm in a state when I'm moving through reality that to me the system doesn't exist. It's a fiction. If it ever decides it wants to come for me, then I'll deal with it. You know, sometimes I have to deal with it. Like when I was applying for my residency in Mexico, I had to fill out forms, I had to answer questions, and I had to say yes sir, no sir, three bags full sir, just so I can have a little card which will stop me getting kicked out of the country. That's fine, I'm prepared to do that, not a problem. Because it's easy for me to do that, it grants me freedom of movement. Past that point, I don't care. So because I'm in that state, I don't attract things to me. I just read the energy field. Ah, I'm getting a feeling I should go somewhere else now. So I do that. And then when I do that, something always happens to where I was going to go or where I just was. I get these feelings and I just follow them. I just follow my intuition and I just kind of breeze through it. And I don't ever worry about what the system might do to me because to me, the system doesn't exist. And there's nothing it can do to me. The most radical thing the system could ever do to me would be change my environment. Arrest me and put me in jail, which would mean I'd be doing a hell of a lot of meditation. So, and that would just be the next part of the journey for me. It's a weird way of looking at things. But when people can do that and they can look at other people and view them as their self, in Lakesh, I am another yourself. We are here in this realm having this experience together. Even if I don't know you and you're just watching this video, well, we're having the same experience because I'm in your house right now. I'm talking to you on whatever screen it is you're looking at this. So we're connected. We're energetically connected. You know, and I try to share these things, like, just to try to make the world better and to try to make people's lives better. I mean, I would really like people to wake up to the power that they have and the ability they have to simply turn their back on the system, because if enough people do it, they don't have to do these videos anymore. I can just continue with experiencing what it is to be me, which is what I came here for. I don't want to be the best version of myself. I want to be myself to the fullest of my potential in being myself, whatever that is. And I don't know what it is. I'm still finding out what it is. It's a process. That's what life's all about. You're here to experience you and to find out what it means to be you and what you can do with that. And we are incredible people. We are incredible creations. We are capable of so many amazing things. But people have been tricked into thinking they don't have any power, thinking that they have to go along with a system that is essentially fiction, and tricked into thinking they have to pay to be alive before they can have access to the abundance that exists all around them. It's pretty crazy, folks. And that's why I do what I do, and that's where the answer lies. See, the answer to all of it is non-compliance. This whole smart grid they're rolling out, they can't roll it out if people don't buy the smart tech and they don't comply with the smart tech. They just can't do any of it without people's compliance. People using smartphones, people shopping with credit cards, all of this stuff is because people comply with their own slavery. People step outside their moral compass in everything that they do. And we know how bad and damaging this tech can be. I showed you, I think on a recent report, they're bringing in mandatory phone scanning, phone cloning. And there's devices that can do this, can just basically mirror your phone. Some people say, oh no, they can't do that. Well, yeah, they can. And they can get stuff on the cloud as well. Stuff that you've got stored on the cloud. It might be, you know, you might have deleted all your chat history on your phone or all this sort of stuff, but it still mostly exists on the cloud anyway, previous versions of it. So for people who are hooked up to OneDrive and all this sort of stuff, this can only happen if people allow their licenses to be put on their phone or if they carry their phone with them. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, you know, we used to just get up in the morning. I'd get up before my parents were awake, before my mother was awake. And I'd just go out. And I'd just know that I had to be home before dark. She wouldn't worry about me. She wouldn't be ringing up neighbours. She wouldn't be, I had no cell phone. I had no money on me. I had nothing. I'd just get on my push bike and I'd take off. I'd go down the beach. I'd go down the creek. I'd go visit people. I'd just do whatever. I'd go down to the amusement park or whatever. And I'd just get home by dark and everything was good. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have any of that shit. And cell phones, I saw a thing the other day, some video on YouTube of women complaining that they set up these dating events, apparently, singles nights, and no men are showing up. It's just all women. You know, you might get, you know, an event with, you know, 80 women show up and there'll be like 10 or 20 men. Men just aren't going to any of these singles things anymore because no one wants to go and sit at a table in a restaurant in a singles night and be judged by all these people in the room and be judged by, you know, oh, look, this guy's scoring or that guy's scoring or whatever, or she's interested in, like, all the women start judging each other, all the men start judging each other. It used to be you'd go out to a nightclub or you'd go to a party or you'd go to somewhere where there was a band playing and just, people are just, you know, having a relaxing night, dancing on the dance floor. People get attracted to each other, you meet people. None of this happens anymore. People just don't react the way people used to react in life. People don't have any life skills. People don't read anymore. They just read the summary that Google gives them. You know, we're losing everything that it means to be human through smart technology. Through technology in general. When the internet started, it was fantastic. It really was. I mean, it was access to so much stuff. Now, like I said a couple of reports ago, I can't even get any pleasure going online anymore. I don't even do it. I'm better off watching a series, TV series, Game of Thrones or whatever, you know, just watch something just for entertainment because it's difficult to find information online anymore because there's so much AI. You notice all the videos of people disappearing lately.
Check out this crazy phenomenon where people are just vanishing right in thin air.
This video is in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Look at the lady with the hat on. Look at that. Gone. Vanished. This phenomenon has been happening all over the world. Can't nobody explain it. Now, is this the beginning of the rapture or is this something else? Look at this. Completely vanishes. Look at these ladies in the store, scared and confused about what they just witnessed.
So I've seen a few of these videos, and I'll tell you what, folks. You call it the rapture, alien abductions, AI. Give me your thoughts.
Interesting. You got to wonder whether these are AI. There's so many of these things coming out. These sort of videos were coming out years ago as well. But again, you look at that, and you try to get a little bit interested in it, maybe. And you think, gee, is it something I should look into? But then your first immediate thought is, no, it's just probably AI. So what's the point? Any information anybody sends me now, when it's video information, I look at it and I go, how do I know it's real? How do I know any story I'm reading is real? How do I know it's not AI? How do I know any piece of news I'm seeing is real? How do I know it's not AI? How do I know half the news readers I'm listening to aren't robots and AI? How do I know any of the politicians are not AI? What's the point in even using the internet anymore? I mean, it's really got to that point. That's kind of how I'm feeling about it, folks. I mean, it's good for watching a TV show or booking an airline ticket. But that's about it these days. So hopefully there's more and more people that are feeling like this as well. And hopefully people will start going out and interacting with each other in the real world rather than doing it online. Perhaps it will lead to some sort of restoration of humanity. Because humanity's in deep shit. I mean, while they're doing all this stuff, we're in deep shit, folks. I mean, the supply chain is still breaking down. The food chain is still breaking down. I'm really lucky that I'm in Europe at the moment. But I'm going to get out of Europe pretty quickly because I've just got this feeling that I should. But who knows really what's going to happen? They're going to stretch this out as long as they can, like they've done with the Gaza genocide. They like to stretch it out as long as they can and milk every last drop from people. And the Gaza genocide, it's still so horrific, folks. I mean, 11,000 prisoners, 11,000 Palestinians being held in jail, being tortured by Israeli soldiers every minute of every day, some of them for years.
I heard that again, and I was, the first thing that came to my mind was like, why the hell is he screaming like this? And the answer was simple. That's the scream and the pain of someone who just came out of Israeli jails from Gaza. And automatically one question came to my mind. Do you hate the Nazi? Do you hate Hitler? If you do, then how you don't hate this? Listen.
החלום שלי, וזה מה שהצלחתי לעשות בקדנציה הזאת, שהמחבלים יפחדו, וטוב מאוד שמחבלים מרטיבים בלילה, כי הם מפחדים, מפחדים מהמג'נון בן גביר, מפחדים מה שעשיתי, מפחדים שנביא תנינים לבתי הכלא.
He hypocrite enough to hate the Nazi and Hitler, but not hate the new Nazi. What the hell is wrong with the world? When we asked about why this scream, he said that he's carrying the pain of all the prisoners inside of Israeli jails. No food, medical neglection, torture. And that's the sound of pain that he's carrying. Not just for him, for more than 11,000 Palestinian prisoners being held hostages in Israeli jails. Circulate the story, for God's sake.
You think you are prepared, but nothing prepares you for Gaza. Never forget that our national colleagues cannot leave Gaza. So the fact that I'm here talking on their behalf and that they will hear and see through your outlets what we are reporting is very, very important. But unfortunately, as you said as well, week after week, we hear the same thing. All the situation in Gaza, West Bank and in East Jerusalem, it's bad. And it is. I was in Gaza earlier this month, only my second time, and it's just, there are no words. I've been doing this for 30 years. Started with Médecins Sans Frontières in Grozny in the First War. I was based in Somalia, Mogadishu, before coming here. You think you are prepared, but nothing prepares you for Gaza. And I thought going in the second time would make things easier, but it just doesn't. It just doesn't. And as you rightly say, despite the ceasefire of last October, there is perhaps less fire, but the violence continues. We hear bombs nearby. There is gunfire every day. And we'll make sure that you get the reports from the UN Department of Safety and Security that you can see the trends. It's tense in Gaza as we speak. The yellow line has moved again. That means today more than 2 million people live on less than half of what the Gaza Strip was before this war. And that yellow line is dangerous. When I left Gaza the first time, they shot at a taxi driver that was transporting two of my colleagues. That taxi driver was killed. My two colleagues, young medical doctors, that were on their way to Rafah to support medical evacuations, they are not okay. And their numbers don't appear.
The human race has truly lost its way, folks. And I don't want to ever hear any Western politician speak about human rights or caring about a goddamn thing, or they have stayed silent in the face of this. as I said before, every politician on earth who supports the state of Israel is a parasite, either a misinformed fool or a psychopath, and has absolutely abdicated any privilege they had to ever govern. All of them need to be arrested. All of them need to be held accountable for war crimes, not just the IDF, but every politician, every Western media person, every spokesperson who has ever spoken out in favor of what Israel is doing should be charged with war crimes and arrested, taken to some place and locked up for a very long time. Like I said, I suggest Jewish Autonomous Oblast, build a wall around it, put them all in there, and don't let them have an airport, don't let them travel, just leave them in there and leave them to their own devices. I think that's what they need. But anyway, I'll leave it there for now, folks. I think I've said enough. Thank you for joining on this report. It's always a pleasure to have your company. The same thanks I always give to people, those who leave positive comments, those who send me kind emails. I'm sorry for anybody who's been emailing me through my Hotmail account as well, folks, my Helix 7 Hotmail account. I'm currently locked out of that account again for the last week or 10 days. This happens periodically when I'm traveling. Imagine they'll grant me access to it in Mexico when I return, which isn't too far away. But yeah, my apologies to anyone who's been emailing me through that account. You shouldn't really email me through that account anyway. There's like over 8 or 10,000 emails in that account, and it just gets flooded by spam all the time. If you have something important to say to me, or you need to contact me for some valid reason, if you go to my website to the contact page, you'll see a Proton account. You can click where it says click here and your email client should load, or you can just hover over it and you'll see my Proton mail address at the bottom of the page on the taskbar. So yeah, maybe just use that. That's really the way people should be contacting me, not through the Helix 7 Hotmail account, as I'm locked out of that at the moment. But anyway, folks, I'll leave it there for now. Again, thank you to all those people. Of course, thank you to anybody who makes a contribution. I really do appreciate it, folks. It's the only thing that's kept this show in the air. And I'll leave you with a song now, and possibly something else. And I'll look forward to speaking to you again soon, folks. Please take very good care until then. In Lakesh. Hate the sin, but love the sinner, even though they're eating kids for dinner. Shut your mouth and don't ask why, 'cause if you do, you'll die by suicide.
It's really time for the country to get into something else. Now that nothing came out about me, you mentioned two names. I'm sure they're fine. I'm sure they're fine.
Hate the sin, but love the sinner. My redactions need a distraction. Iran's the latest spinner. All our leaders serving demons. We're in a spiritual war. Shame and I.